Hello and welcome to this week's Off the Bench. My name is Az from FPL Black Box.
And I'm Sam from FPL Family.
Well, Sam, game week 23 is not over yet. We still have the small matter of the Man City and Arsenal match to come on Wednesday evening. Haaland went off at half-time in his first match of the double game week, leaving FPL managers who have triple-captained him stewing on whether he's fit to start in the midweek fixture. There were so many blanks, oh God, across FPL manager teams, made worse by so many bench points for so many managers as well. We did see Liverpool return to winning ways with Salah and Gakpo picking up goals, an assist for Darwin and a clean sheet for their defence as well. Could this finally be the start of some form ahead of their newly announced double in game week 25? Sam, I dread to ask you this question because I know the answer. How is your FPL team doing and how did all of this affect your week so far?
Oh, Az, what has happened to me in the last few months? Like, honestly, I think, you know, I sent you a screenshot yesterday, didn't I, of my arrows over the last few weeks. And it's been like 8 green on the row now. Now, of course, this could all still change, couldn't it? Because we've got, as you say, you know, the Arsenal-Man City game in midweek to contend with. And if you're on the wrong players from those two sides, that could really hurt because, you know, they're heavily owned. But another green arrow. I'm up to 77K at the minute, which when you think in game week 15, I was at nearly 1.6 million. Mad.
Honestly, I mean, last year you went on a run of reds.
That kind of
broke
never
your season.
Ended.
But this season, I mean, yeah, like you say, since game week 16, you've gone from game week 15, 1.5 million to 77,000 now. I mean, that is one of the biggest rises of ranks I have ever seen in this game. So fair play. You got Darwin's assist last night.
Yeah.
Absolutely loving it. Complete opposite for me. I have had an absolutely awful week, despite my team looking quite good.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
Doubles. Oh, I know. Awful. The only returns I've had have been from Rashford and Saka. Kane blank, De Bruyne blank, Matoma, double Newcastle defence, Kepa. Awful. Let's not dwell on it, shall we? Should we just move on?
Well, I think it's one of those things, though, isn't it? Where, like, most people have got Andreas on their bench. There was a lot of Almirons on people's benches. There was a lot of Luke Shaws. Mm. Yeah, a lot of people benching Luke Shaw. And I think in part that was because of the double game week, you know, people having to play all three Arsenal, probably getting in an extra City defender to cover out their three City picks. So it was a difficult week. And I think a lot of managers will be in the same boat as you, where the players that you would expect to do well, like nobody is expecting Kane to blank against Leicester. His record against them is so good. Like I sat on podcast last week and said that had it not been a double game week, I think Kane would have been a great captaincy
Same.
Option.
And now,
yeah. But then you see him blank and you kind of think, well, that was an absolute, well, it was a catastrophe from Spurs' point of view, wasn't it? And maybe, you know, we'll start with them because I'd rather just get that out of the way, to be honest, and deal with it then. I think, you know, Leicester were the surprise package of the game week for me. Like, I wasn't really expecting them to play as well as they did. And since Tete's arrived, they do seem to have got this kind of new lease of life in that Leicester City team. And Maddison coming back and playing through the middle is making him a really, really nice, attractive option. The fixtures, though, coming forward for Leicester do somewhat put me off. What do you think? Watching that game with Leicester at the weekend, did they make you kind of go, oh, maybe there's an opportunity there for investment?
Well, it's 10 goals in the last three games. But I think you hit them down the head. The biggest thing is since Maddison's been back, that's been eight of those 10 goals. So he's got a new role. I think Rodgers has tweaked where he's playing. There's always question marks around his fitness a little bit, but haven't seen any evidence there's any injury going on. He got subbed in the Villa game, played 87 minutes against Spurs. And he just looks absolutely unreal. The difficulty is, like you say, we've got a double game week to come in game week 25, where we're going to see lots of investment in Arsenal, Liverpool. We're going to talk about Salah, Gakpo and all these guys. And, you know, Maddison has Arsenal in that, and he's probably still the only one that I'd consider from Leicester. In 26, though, it's Southampton away.
Mm.
And then we're going to mention what happens with Leicester in the Cup as well in 28. But yeah, I like him from 26. I think Maddison could be someone who I look at.
Yeah, because it's interesting, isn't it? Because obviously at the moment, FPL is difficult, isn't it? Because you've got loads of doubles, you've got loads of blanks, you've got lots of kind of issues for FPL managers to fix. You know, you got your Brighton assets, your Brentford assets, obviously Newcastle and Manchester United, who aren't going to play in game week 25. You've got doubles in there. So investing in players like Maddison could be quite hard ahead of maybe game week 26. Like you say, probably that's the point where it'll be easier for FPL managers to invest. But even then, with the game week 27 doubles that you have coming up, probably people's heads will still be looking in that direction. And he could be one of those players that is in the perfect run of form to invest in, is playing in the right position, is getting a lot of attacking threat through the middle with him, but you never quite have the opportunity to go to because there's always something else or somebody else that you need to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, what about Kane though? I mean, we talk about Spurs. I mean, it was a pretty terrible performance.
Yeah, it was awful.
Bentancur's injured now until the end of the season. So another injury for Spurs. I mean, before this week, like you said, we were talking up Kane. We were saying, you know, is he getting close to this like kind of essential status alongside Haaland? You know, it's two home games next, West Ham next, then Chelsea, and then a really good run, Wolves, Forest, Southampton, Everton. But it's amazing how one game week can kind of give you a little bit of cold feet, can't it? Because I'm looking at Kane now and thinking, oh, is there better options, maybe?
Yeah, and I think particularly when Salah's got a double game week coming up in 25, because for most of us, the kind of the premium conversation is the one that we've been having all season, isn't it? Where you're thinking about where are your premium picks and how do you best invest in them? And I think for most FPL managers, particularly, you know, speaking for myself here, Haaland and Kane were the non-negotiables. They were the ones that it was like, right, I have to have both of those. Haaland because of his ownership, even though his form has dipped a little bit, and Kane because he's been in such consistent form. And, you know, had it not been for Haaland this season, everybody would have owned Harry Kane. We'd have been, you know, bigging him up and saying, you know, how great he's been. He's on track to have his best season and all of this kind of stuff. Then we have one difficult performance for Spurs against Leicester and we suddenly all go into panic. And I think in part that's because we are thinking about the double game weeks and thinking about how to budget for our premiums. But, you know, the one thing I would say is that the Bentancur injury for me as a Spurs fan is probably one of the worst things that could have happened to Spurs, because what Bentancur does is he moves the play so cleanly and nicely from the defence into the attacking moments. He protects the defence and is able to start those counter attacks. Now, without him there, we are running short now of players that can play in that position, because of course Bissouma is also out injured, so we're kind of down to the Pape Sarr, Ollie Skip bracket of player. Now both of those two, well, they just haven't had minutes this season, so they're not going to be up to match fitness in the way that I would need and want from them going forward. However, I do think, particularly with players like Kane, you don't have the opportunity necessarily or the desire to change them, because we're going to have to start looking ahead at game week 25, aren't we? And the fact that, you know, we've all got quite heavy investment in clubs like Man United, in clubs like Newcastle, and some of us in Brighton too. So you're going to have to be dealing with those issues if you want to field a full team in game week 25. So the last thing you really want to be doing is taking out Kane, particularly, as you say, ahead of two home games where he is playing well. So I think you hold. I don't think you panic. Let's see what happens against West Ham, because they're not exactly solid defensively right now. He can easily score against them in the game that we have coming up. Do you think you do agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've got him. I'm holding him for now. I mean, you talk about premium options as well, like De Bruyne not really delivering for us. It's a big game for him, I think, against Arsenal, because another blank for De Bruyne.
Massive,
and I think that switch to Salah is going to be easy for people, even in a week where City have Bournemouth and, you know, and we have blank players, because the premium assets are often the first ones that we look to move out when we're considering transfers, because they're taking up so much of our budget. I mean, let's talk about João Felix at Chelsea. I mean, if you are looking to move Kane down to someone cheaper, you know, Felix has come in as a striker. He's 7.5 million, which is an amazing price for him. Scored against West Ham, got 3 bonus as well. The Chelsea attack isn't really clicking still. You still don't really know who the first choice players are, but whoever the first choice team is, João Felix has got to be first name on the team sheet, right? He looks electric.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was excellent, particularly in that first sort of half an hour period against West Ham at the beginning of the game. I thought Chelsea looked really on it. They were really good attack-wise, and João Felix was kind of, he was the player that was leading that, right? Alongside Enzo Fernandez, who, by the way, I thought also had a brilliant game. And Chelsea's fixtures are really, really nice. Plus, they have the added benefit of not blanking in game week 25 and then not blanking again in game week 28. So the fact that we're going to have this Chelsea available at times where it's going to be really tough for us as FPL managers means that investing in their players, whilst you won't get currently the benefit of a double with them, what you do have is a nice fixture run where you're guaranteed
really
to have them
nice
playing.
Fixtures.
Yeah, and you're guaranteed to get him playing, right? Because unless he gets injured, he's not going to be dropped. He's going to be in the starting 11 week after week. I agree with you. I think they are still really missing a number nine. And I think that's the issue you have with Chelsea, is that you're going to see them getting into all these really nice positions. You're going to see Enzo Fernandez dominating the midfield, moving the ball around really nicely. You're going to see João Félix going on these really, really lovely runs. But have you got that final product in the box? Now, can Havertz do that? Yes, maybe. But are we yet seeing it consistently from Chelsea? I don't know. But what I do know is that they did look a lot better. And the reality is, I think Chelsea were unlucky not to get something from that game against West Ham. And I think for most managers, Kepa still remains the goalkeeper of choice over the next few weeks. If you don't have him, as weird as it sounds to say I prioritise a goalkeeper transfer, I really would prioritise a goalkeeper transfer, because Kepa's going to offer you so much at a time where I just don't see Danny Ward providing much in the way of clean sheet potential, even though I think Leicester could get stuff going forward. So Chelsea, I think, are a team for me that I'm really looking heavily at. I think investing in the defence and in players like João Félix, and if you don't have the money or you want to go for a lot of premiums, you want to, you know, take advantage of Salah's double game week, then maybe Enzo Fernandez isn't a terrible shout at the kind of budget end of the midfield as well, because he did pick up the assist in game week 23.
It's interesting with Chelsea, isn't it? Because it's classic fixtures over form. I mean, the fixtures for Chelsea are, I mean, I don't think they could get much better unless they had maybe the double in 25. I mean, they've got Southampton, Spurs, Leeds, Leicester, Everton. You know, that's an incredible run. The problem is, I mean, since João Félix was added to FPL, they've scored 3 goals in 6 games.
Mm.
Okay, he wasn't available for 3 of those games because he got the red card against Fulham. But still, it's worrying when you look at the attack and kind of how misfiring they are. But I'm a believer in fixtures in this game. And, you know, you've got to think that Potter's going to turn things around and Chelsea are going to start scoring goals just because of the amazing options they've got and once they start gelling. So I'm all for Félix. I really like him. I'm unsure about the others, like Mudryk, for example. He's a good price, but I'm not sure I'd be going there. Mount was benched. I don't know about any of the other attackers. Defence, I mean, looks decent. I mean, Badiashile, I think, could be a good pick, given that he hasn't got Champions League to worry about. Reece James, if you're looking for a punt, he's gone up in price, but still, you know, he's so important to the way Chelsea play. So we're starting to get some options from Chelsea, but it might be a bit of a wait and see. But yeah, I mean, coming over to the other side of London, Arsenal. I mean, there was lots of talk about, you know, Arsenal bouncing back against Brentford. Unlucky, I think, not to get the win in that game. But Tony was absolutely outstanding. So even though his goal was controversial, Tony was still absolutely amazing in that game, and the Arsenal defence couldn't deal with him. Further up the pitch, though, I mean, we've obviously got this really settled Arsenal side. You know, it's the same team that's starting every week. But now we've got Trossard in the side. Oh. He's just scored straight away as well, comes off the bench. Have you got Martinelli? Are you worried about him?
Yeah, I do have Martinelli. I am worried about him. So I very nearly took a -4 going into game week 23 to move sideways from Martinelli to Ødegaard. And I just didn't feel comfortable taking out a player that I thought would get minutes in the two double game week games for another player in the same team with the same fixtures. It just felt a little bit too sideways for me to make that decision. But now the immediate impact that Trossard had when he came on does worry me a little bit. I mean, Trossard I think he's fantastic, but he's a very selfish player, right? He will make the runs, but he's a fantastic asset. And we saw that when he played for Brighton for all those years. Like, he was by far and away Brighton's best player for such a long time. He's come into this Arsenal team. It's taken a while for him to kind of get minutes, and he's still getting minutes off the bench as opposed to getting the start. I don't think, famous last words, that he'll start against Man City on Wednesday evening, simply because I think Arteta, against such a big team and in a must-win game, that he will go with the team that he knows and that know each other the best. I think Trossard will come off the bench, but I do think from game week 24 onwards, there is a real risk of Martinelli not starting in matches, still getting minutes off the bench, but not starting games, or at least sharing the starts with Trossard. And long term, that's an issue, right? Because particularly heading into games like game week 25, when I need three Arsenal players because I want them for the two fixtures that they have, but also because I'm not going to have a bench available in game week 25. So I can't risk not having minutes from the players that I have. I think Martinelli is becoming a sell right now. Do you have him still?
No, I don't. And I was very pro selling him before the double game, and even more so, I think, now. Because what we're seeing is Arsenal not only struggling a little bit in games, but when they are struggling, Martinelli's the first sacrificial lamb,
in a way,
because they don't really have the options elsewhere to make those subs. I mean, Saka's place is absolutely nailed down. There's no one that can really come on to replace him. They wouldn't, because of how important he is.
Yeah.
Odegaard as well, orchestrating everything. I mean, Vieira can come on for him, but... You know, he's miles
the captain,
behind.
Right?
Exactly. He's miles behind. And Ketia, with Jesus out, there's not really anyone that can come in for him. Whereas Martinelli's got, you know, a new £25 million signing, desperate to prove himself after being made an outcast by De Zerbi at Brighton. So all the signs point to quite an easy Martinelli sale, I think. The only sort of plus side for Martinelli is his underlying stats are really, really good.
They are
he's still
really
getting
good.
Opportunities, still having shots, still doing all the things we want to see him do. But for me, the Trossard shadow looms, you know, too much over him. So yeah, I think he's a problem for people that have got him. Basically.
The one thing I would say is that when Jesus does come back, I think Martinelli's position in the team will be better.
Yeah.
If he's continuing to get minutes by that point, like if Trossard and he are sharing the starts, I do think when it's Jesus up top, that will strengthen Martinelli's appeal because their chemistry and their relationship was so positive before. You know, we've seen Nketiah, I think, put one ball through to Martinelli in the time that he's been starting. Now, that's really not ideal from a Martinelli perspective because you want that link-up play. You want to see the kind of assist from Jesus to Martinelli. And that was what was so successful in the early part of the season. It was the connection between those two. Since we've lost Jesus, we've lost that connection because Nketiah is, you know, he's far more of a box player. You know, he's going to hang around waiting for the ball to come to him. So therefore, he's more likely to get the end product. Whereas Jesus had a bit of both. You know, sometimes you'd find him in the box to provide that finish, but other times you'd see him kind of Harry Kane-esque dropping deeper, collecting the ball and sending it through to Martinelli, who was in a better spot than him. And it's that partnership that made Martinelli so attractive in the earlier part of the season. Will we see that come back? Yes, maybe. But the question for me is, will Trossard have already established that spot as his own before Jesus gets back into that starting 11? And if that's the case, I think it's going to be tough for Martinelli.
Yep. I mean, we do see kind of redemption stories in FPL, like, you know, suddenly Martinelli becomes an option again, scores a goal, and then his place is nailed on back in the side. I mean, a great redemption story has been Solly March, right? We mentioned Brighton and Trossard. I mean, people really kicking themselves. You know, anyone who went for March over Matoma, for example, had to endure all these blanks, misses, everything, while Matoma just racks up the points. And then it just swings around so quickly, doesn't it? March gets the goal and Matoma blanks. I mean, I've always been very pro Matoma. I still think he's the best asset at Brighton. I don't personally think it's a case of you know, which one to get. I still think Matoma is the better option. I think he's more clinical. I think he's more likely to get FPL returns than March. But the decision more with Brighton's double on the horizon is, do we go for both of them? Double Brighton midfields. Here we go.
So your strategy?
Don't sigh.
No, I'm not. I'm not sighing at all because I think double Brighton could actually be the thing that we should be doing. But they're going to blank in 25. They're going to double in 27. They're probably going to blank again in 28 because both them and Manchester United, who they're due to play, are still in the FA Cup. So it only takes one of them to progress in the competition, and they're blanking again. They do have two further games yet to be rescheduled. And of course, if they do miss 28, they'll have three further games to be rescheduled. So the potential upside with Brighton is massive, with already one double game week, you know, on the calendar and three more potentially to come. But you do have to get over game week 25 first, and you do have to have a plan for 28. Now, if the FA Cup goes as it is, maybe actually game week 28 is free hit territory, and we need to be thinking about that anyway. So investing heavily in Brighton makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, Matoma is, well, he's phenomenal, isn't he? But March, it's really interesting because in my head over the last few weeks, I'd kind of written March off as an asset because every time I saw a Brighton goal come through, Matoma was in some ways part of it. But actually, you know, when you look at it across, you know, the last few weeks since game week 17, March has registered 7 attacking returns. That's the most across the Brighton team. He's also the leading goal scorer in the same period with 5 goals. He's currently registering 8.4 points per start since game week 17, which is a phenomenal number to be getting at the price point that he is. Because bear in mind, you know, we're not talking about a premium asset. And I think, you know, if I sat here and said that KDB was averaging 8.4 points per start at the moment, we'd all go, okay, great. But we're not. We're talking about a player that, you know, is coming into the game significantly cheaper at 5.1 million than most of the ones that you'd pay premium price for. You know, he's averaging 1.9 points per match more than Haaland at the moment, 2.4 more than Kane, 2.6 more than Saka, who are the players that we've just sat here and said, you know, we want to be invested in. So I love March right now. I think he looks like a great option. Just make sure if you do invest, you have a plan to deal with the blanks.
94 points was March's best season in 2018-19. Yeah. He got 7 attacking returns across the whole season. He's got 11 attacking returns this season, 103 points.
Yeah.
Last season, he got 61 points. And he's, you know, he's on course to, what, triple that this year?
Yeah.
Incredible for him. Yeah. And it's these double-digit hauls, isn't it? I mean, he's had 1, 2, 3, he's had 4 double-digit hauls in the last 7 game weeks as well. So, you know, he's a player that can explode massively. Matoma may be a bit more consistent. I still back Matoma, but yeah, I think March is a great pick as well.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because I guess it depends on how much attention you pay to the stats. Because, you know, if you look at the expected tallies, March is top for expected goals, expected assists, expected goal involvement across that Brighton team. And normally that's the sort of thing I would look for. And I think when I'm watching the games, Matoma passes the eye test. He's the one that attracts me. His style of play, the involvement that he has. But like you say, more consistent, but less explosive. Whereas March has the ability to frustrate you 1 week, and then bang the next week and return you a double digit haul. So having the two of them, particularly when you think what combined, they're going to cost you 10.4 million, which is mad for two really good Brighton players, particularly ones that are going to have a lot of doubles to come in this closing part of the season. So yeah, I do like them. I think you just have to have a plan. I don't have any Brighton at the moment. And obviously I'm not planning to get any ahead of 25 because of the blank that they have there. But I am looking at game week 24 thinking, I think I could be missing out on some points here against Fulham next week because I don't want to cause myself more issues moving forward. But as soon as the deadline passes for game week 25, I'll be investing in Brighton.
Who would have thought? Brighton versus Fulham, battle for Europe. Massive game for both clubs. Yeah, really excited for that. Yeah, I think you invest from 2026, right, with Brighton.
I think you have to.
And hold off for now.
I think for game week 27, when they double, you really have to be heavily invested in them.
Yeah. So opposite of investment, we'll come to Southampton next. They lost the game against 10-man Wolves. Nathan Jones is out as well. I mean, it's disarray really at Southampton. Team to target now? I mean, I think they are. I mean, new manager bounce. We don't know who's going to come in at the moment. I mean, there was a bit of a new manager bounce. Southampton played Brighton in Jones's first game. The first half, Southampton played really well. And I was watching that game thinking, oh no, there's going to be a bit of an upset here. In the end, Brighton won it, you know, come out and played well. But yeah, who's is coming? I mean, can they turn Southampton around? They're right at the bottom of the table. They've got Chelsea away next. We've talked about Felix already. Makes him attractive, doesn't it? That's why I think if you're going to invest, now's probably the time.
Yeah, it makes Chelsea incredibly attractive. I think it's tough with Southampton. I think they're in a dip. You know, they've got some players out with injury. They obviously now don't currently have a manager, and you do often. We saw it with Dyche, right, in Everton's first game when he was in charge. You do often get a bit of a bounce, but Southampton haven't appointed anyone, and I think who they appoint will be very important in whether they stay up. They need somebody that's ready for a relegation battle and that's prepared to instill some steel in this team, because that's what they're struggling with most at the moment. They are very, well, they're not scoring enough goals. They've kept one clean sheet all season. Like, I mean, this is a real, you've got to tighten up defensively if they've got any chance of staying in the league. And coming up against that Chelsea team next week, I just don't see it. So I think that they are a team that you target. I think the interesting thing for them is that they are one of the teams that does play twice in game week 27. But they are also still in the FA Cup, so they could blank again in 28. I think, you know, I had Carl Walker-Peters in my team from the restart because the Southampton fixtures were quite nice. I thought that they might show a bit of fight in that kind of restart period of the season. I thought they might try, you know, try and get themselves out of trouble. But actually what's happened is they've slipped further into trouble and ended up parting ways with the manager. So he's injured. I need to deal with him. But I'm not going to invest in Southampton. I think of all the teams that double in 27, they're the one that I'm least interested in. They have, however, got what, 24, 25, 26 to prove themselves, to find a new manager, to get some bounce and to put themselves back on the radar of FPL managers in terms of investing in them. But otherwise, they are absolutely the team to target right now. And so investing in Chelsea this week makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Nonto, for example, the lead striker, because in 25, he has Southampton at home. And I know there's doubles going on, but I've also got many, many fires to put out with United players and Brighton players and Newcastle players and stuff. And, you know, someone like Nonto's perfect in that week because he's got that great-looking home game against Southampton, who, you know, the new manager might be in place by then, but it's going to be early days, still in transition. We don't know what we're going to get. So, I'm looking at Leeds and thinking, you know, they haven't got the blanks to worry about and they've got that nice fixture. So I'm looking at him. Player who does have a blank, Bruno Fernandes and United as well. Lots of managers sold Fernandes for they either went to De Bruyne and were punished currently. I mean, it could all change. Or they went for Mahrez and got absolutely richly rewarded. And then others kept and had to deal with a blank. Also had to deal with him through on goal and missing and getting a save from Melier.
Yeah.
Unlucky managers who kept him, do you reckon?
Yeah. I mean, I was a seller this week. I sold Bruno Fernandes because I wanted to prep myself for game week 25, but also I only had two Arsenal players and I wanted a third. So I went Bruno Fernandes to Saka this week on the basis that Arsenal had five games in the three game weeks where Manchester United had two. But honestly, I watched that game behind my hands because I was terrified of not having Bruno Fernandes in that record, in that game. His record at Elland Road is crazy. Like, he plays really well there and he's been so much better away from home this season than he has at Old Trafford. So I was watching that game thinking, oh, Bruno. And when he went through on goal, I was like, here comes the punishment, like, for selling him. And I did. I honestly feel like I got away with one in that one. I think he is one of those players that, you know, you've just mentioned it, right? Most FPL managers have probably got Marcus Rashford and Luke Shaw, probably with Bruno Fernandes if you trebled up on Manchester United for their double last week. Plus, they've also got Trippier in there. Maybe they've got Botman or Almiron as a second Newcastle player. And a lot of managers have got either Ivan Toney or they've got Matoma or they've got March, somebody from Brighton or Brentford. So potentially you could have like six or seven players that aren't going to play in game week 25, which means you have to make some sacrifices if you want to field a full 11 that week without using a chip or spending too much on, you know, -4, -8 to get a team out. And Bruno Fernandes, I think, is the one that's the most, I'm going to say disposable, but that makes me sound like I think he's a bad asset. And I don't think that, but I think you're going to want Marcus Rashford straight back in after the blank in 25. Arguably, in my opinion, you're also going to want Luke Shaw back after the blank in 25. Whereas Bruno, I do think that there are potential other options that you could go to after that blank in 25, investing in, you know, Martial Matoma, whichever Brighton asset you don't have in their place, getting in Mahrez if you don't have him already, because the form is unbelievable for him right now, could be the right thing to do. I think Bruno Fernandes is a sell, but a reluctant one. Would you
think he's a sell this week, though? I mean, he's got Leicester at home this week. I mean, you mentioned Mahrez. I mean, Mahrez has got Forest away, which obviously is a very, very good fixture. And then he's got Bournemouth away in 25. But I'm looking at some of the other fixtures and there's no one that this is the problem with the premiums this season is there's no one really screaming out for investment. I mean, even Haaland is struggling and now he's got this bit of an injury as well. You know, Salah's scored, so now he's the popular, but he's got Newcastle away this week. So I'd rather have Fernandes at home to Leicester, I think, than moving back to Salah, for example. Yeah. For me, it's Fernandes to Mahrez, or you just hold Fernandes if you still got him.
Yeah, I mean, that is the other thing, is you could hold the transfer this week, keep him for the Leicester game and then sell him ahead of his blank in 25 and maybe look to go for, you know, either a player that plays twice in game week 25. You know, if Gakpo does something again against Newcastle, then maybe you've got another option there, or maybe you could look to go to Salah for his double game week in 25. Maybe one of the Chelsea midfielders might stand up to be counted in game week 24 against Southampton. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely potential to hold in for this one and kind of scout out what's happening across the rest of the teams ahead of game week 25. But I think he is going to be the one at Manchester United that you can afford to sell rather than Rashford or yep. Shaw. I mean, I'm a Mahrez owner. I have been since the restart. He was a player that I took a little bit of a punt on, I think is the best way of saying it. You know, I felt that I wanted to be invested in Manchester City coming out of the World Cup. And obviously I had Haaland anyway, but I just wanted somebody else. And it is absolutely insane, the numbers that Mahrez has been posting since coming out of the World Cup. He's returned 58 points. That's more than any other Manchester City player since game week 17. In that time, he's got 4 goals, 5 assists and 9 bonus points in 8 matches. Now, this is the kind of form that we've never consistently seen from Mahrez since his time playing for Leicester City. Like, we've not had this one consistency of starts, 2 consistency of returns, or 3 importance in that Man City team, because I'm looking at Man City right now and it's all about Mahrez, isn't it? Like, even Haaland seems to be taking a bit of a backseat right now. And of course, you know, there was a little bit of the injury, but Pep did say if they weren't winning 3-0, he probably would have risked leaving him on there. So I don't think it's that bad for Haaland. I'm expecting him to play against Arsenal. I think it was a bit of a protection thing. But Mahrez, I think he's the best City player right now. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, the difference with Mahrez is in previous seasons, you're almost surprised if he's selected.
Yeah.
Whereas this season, he's the main player that I think I am surprised if he doesn't play.
Yeah.
I mean, he did get subbed off at 58 minutes against Spurs, which, you know, is in keeping with seasons he's had in the past. Quite frustrating for owners. But, you know, before that, I mean, he's playing 90 minutes or over 80 minutes in almost every game for the last, what, 6-7 weeks. I mean, 17 points against Spurs, against your guys in game week 20, huge haul, and then another 12 points against Villa as well. So at the moment, I don't think I can advise. I've got De Bruyne, for example. You've got Mahrez. I mean, if I was going to pick one, I'd pick Mahrez at the moment. He's frustrated me in the past, which is why I think I'm reluctant to get him in, which isn't the best way to play FPL, because you need to judge everything, you know, season by season and not focus on past failures. I mean, he has frustrated though. And, you know, we know from Pep as well that things can change very, very quickly. And suddenly a player who's, look at Cancelo, first choice, no issues, can suddenly be dropped. But at the moment, based on what we've seen so far, I think Mahrez is the best pick and a really strong option, maybe even captaincy as well, ahead of Forrest, because Haaland might have this, you know, little bit of an injury doubt.
You see, this is where my head is at right now. Like, I think if you are a KDB owner and you're thinking about how to get Salah in, because obviously, and we'll talk about Liverpool in a minute, but Salah gets the goal in the Merseyside derby and Liverpool looks suddenly to be back on the radar again because they actually played really well. KDB is probably going to have to be the sacrifice to allow that Salah move to happen. But Mahrez's price point means that you could stay trebled on Manchester City if you wanted to, or at least doubled on the Manchester City attack by having Mahrez alongside Haaland. And genuinely, I'm looking at my team, like I set up my bus team for next week, and at the moment, my captain's armband is on Mahrez because he is the in-form player at the moment, playing in the team that's got the best fixture for my squad. Now, am I brave enough to leave it on Mahrez over Haaland? That's a question, because Haaland, of course, got 17 points against Forest earlier on in the season, got the hat trick, got 3 bonus points. So I don't know if I'm brave enough to leave it on Mahrez. But right now, since the restart, Mahrez is by far the form player at Man City. And when they're playing Nottingham Forest, I think he could be a great option for the armband if you own him.
One thing I will mention is the penalty that Mahrez took. I wouldn't be too swayed by that if you are looking to buy Mahrez.
Because
Pep has come out and said he was basically angry that Haaland didn't take the penalty. So something to consider. I don't think we're going to see that again. I think there might have been that little bit of an injury around
I think
Haaland.
That was what it was. I think it was the fact that Haaland had had that knock before in the tackle with Martinez that it eventually led to him being substituted. And it very much seemed like Gundogan was saying, no, Mahrez is going to take it because like there seemed to be a reason for it. As a Mahrez owner, I was like, since when's Mahrez been on penalties? Like, don't get
talk
me wrong.
About jam.
I was delighted. However, it's not something that I think will happen regularly, unless, of course, Haaland isn't on the pitch and then Mahrez is their second choice penalty taker. So if Haaland's not there, then Mahrez is going to take it. But I don't think that, you know, we should be expecting to see Mahrez take every penalty kick.
It's good to know he's second choice, but don't expect penalties every week.
Yeah, I think that's right. But we should expect penalties from Salah, of course.
Yes.
If Liverpool get one. Now, for me, as a Darwin owner, as the most patient and loyal of Darwin owners, because I have had that man for a very, very long time, and he sat in my team picking up 2 points every week. And every week I've sat on the official pod and I've said, I've got to sell Darwin. I've got to sell Darwin. And I was going to sell him going into game week 23. However, the Liverpool double game week in 25 got announced. And suddenly I was like, well, I'm going to give him the time then to have him for that double game week, particularly as it coincided with the blank. So he's going to save me some issues, right? He's going to mean that I've got a player that's playing twice at a time where I might struggle to get 11 players out otherwise. But I watched Liverpool, obviously, closely in the Merseyside derby on Monday evening. And genuinely, that was the best performance that I've seen in a long time. And I wonder whether the return from injury of players like Jota, like Firmino, like Van Dijk, whilst they didn't get a lot of minutes, you know, Firmino and Jota did come on, but Van Dijk didn't. But the fact that they're just back and available and in the squad maybe is the boost that Liverpool needed to just feel like things were improving for them, because it has been a tough season for them. We had a goal from Salah. We had Gakpo scoring his first Liverpool goal. And then obviously Darwin with the assist in that one. Plus clean sheets, like the likes of Robertson and Trent picking up a clean sheet again. Like, are we just about to get Liverpool in the right moment ahead of 25, do you think?
Yeah, or was it just a poor Everton? Or was it a poor Everton performance where they let Liverpool play and couldn't really replicate what they did against Arsenal? Really tricky to know after one week. I mean, the stats for Liverpool attacking wise have been positive. You know, throughout this blip, it's just been the finishing, mostly from Nunes, that's been the problem. And I think he needed to put in a big performance against Everton, and he was one of the best players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, he was substituted for Jota.
Yeah,
at 70 minutes. Because Gakpo, I think, is at risk as well with these players coming back, like you mentioned. I do like his price point.
Yeah.
And again, he got the goal, so I think his place in the team for now is safe. But it's a bit like a Martinelli situation.
I think if
Liverpool aren't performing too well, I think Gakpo and Nunes are going to be at risk of coming off, because the system can change and, you know, they've got these options to come on. That's what you get for Salah for the extra money, is if they're struggling, there's no way they're going to be substituting Salah, for example. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one again, because you want to assess. It's a bit like Chelsea. You want to stop, assess, are these players now clicking? Are we going to get some results? But we haven't really got the time
to do
that, because we need to be looking at them for 25. The good thing is it's Newcastle next.
Yeah, so it's a good test, this.
It is a good test. It's one of the biggest tests, I think, because of how impressive Newcastle have been. We can see what the lineup is. We can see how these players perform in the next game. And then we can decide, you know, because I think if Gakpo plays again and scores or looks decent, I think he's a really good option for people who maybe can't get to Salah because of the way their team's set up. For me, Salah's still the best option. I don't think I'll be moving for Nunes, but again, it's an easy move from Kane to Nunes potentially in 25.
Yeah, I mean, as a Nunes owner, obviously I'm going to hold. I'm not going to move him on ahead of that. But, you know, I do look at Liverpool and I think it was a lot better. And they will go into that Newcastle game with confidence and with some belief, I think, that they've got their key players back. I also don't think that Klopp is going to rush Firmino and Jota back into the team. They have both had relatively long-term injuries. They've both have a history of injuries, right? They regularly seem to pick up something that keeps them out for periods of time. So I don't think that Klopp is going to rush them back into 90 minutes across matches, which I think means that for us as FPL managers, if you do invest in the likes of Gakpo or Darwin, that you're going to get some decent minutes across the double game week, because I don't think Jota's coming in and starting 90 minutes against against either of those two sides. But I do think that there could be some sharing of minutes. Now, that's fine if Liverpool keep creating the level of attacking returns that they have, but actually if they start finishing them as well. So if you get a situation where Liverpool are still being as creative as they have been in this part of the season, but they're actually finishing their chances, then I'll take that for Darwin, because I could probably get more points out of him in 60 minutes than maybe I get in 90. Mm. So let's see. Maybe the threat of Jota, Firmino coming back from injury just helps Darwin to kind of up his game. And he certainly did in the Merseyside derby this time around. So I was pleased with him. What about Everton, though? Because I think we all, on the back of game week 22, when Everton completed the upset of beating Arsenal, we were all kind of like, oh, interesting. And of course, they've got the double game week in 25. I think everybody started to look at, particularly players like Tarkowski, who is still a player that I'm looking at for game week 25. Is he still the best pick there? Was there anyone else from Everton? Because it wasn't the best performance from Everton, was it, on Monday evening?
No, and I wonder if Dyche is going to target these home games and think, you know, these are the games we're going to go out and play with, you know, a bit more desire to win the match. Maybe away from home, it's a sit back and drop deep and kind of hope for the best. And maybe that means, you know, Everton at home is a fixture we target, but Everton away is a lot trickier. I mean, again, very small sample size, really hard to know that from just two games. I was disappointed with Everton. I mean, it's difficult as well. I mean, Calvert-Lewin was out, and you know they played Sims up top. So again, that's a huge blow for the tactics that Dyche wants to play with. Because Calvert-Lewin, getting the ball up to Calvert-Lewin was such an important part of how they beat Arsenal in that match. He caused so many problems for the defence. So to suddenly lose him for the next game is a massive blow. So you know we've got to keep our eye on that. Got to keep an eye on the injury to him to see how it is, but. Yeah, I mean, for me, Tarkowski is still the play. Go for the defence rather than the Everton attack. But yeah, it's a bit, I mean, I've got Patterson on my bench, 3.9. Mm. Wasn't a great performance from Coleman. So I'm wondering if you know, Patterson is going to be fast-tracked back into the side.
I mean, he is back in training. So yeah, you've got a good chance, I think, with him. I think you're going to have to wait to the last minute with Patterson ahead of game week 25 to see whether he's going to get some minutes and see what Dyche says in his press conferences. But
wouldn't buy him, but...
No, I wouldn't buy him. I'd spend that 0.3 more on buying Tarkowski. But yeah. I think if you've got Patterson, you hold right to the last minute before you make a decision, because that could just be a transfer you don't need to make to get a full 11 out in game week 25, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, otherwise from Everton, I think it's so. I mean, the double isn't that great. I mean, they've got Villa at home. But Ollie Watkins is finding some form now.
He's in good form, yeah.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be too surprised. But, you know, that's a decent looking game. But then it's Arsenal away. And I think Arsenal are going to bounce back and win that match. Then it's Forest away. Tough game. Forest are really good at home. Brentford at home. You know, I mean, Tarkowski is a good bench option, but I wouldn't be pulling up trees to bring him in, I don't think.
No, but the other thing Tarkowski does offer is some attacking threat from set pieces. And we saw that in the early part of the Merseyside derby. Like, he did have a moment where he could have and maybe should have returned something for his owners. So whilst I don't know that there's that many clean sheets for Everton, if they do want to stay in the league, they are going to have to continue to tighten up and play more like they did against Arsenal. So I think for me, if you want to invest in Everton for their double, then Tarkowski is the way to go. What are your plans then moving forward? Because obviously game week 24 is going to be a difficult one for managers to navigate, not because it's complicated, because actually it's one of the most straightforward game weeks that we've had in ages. It's just a single game week, normal 10 matches. But what happens in the aftermath of 24 makes it more of a challenge, doesn't it? Because we've got the double and the blank in 25. We've got another double in 27. We're going to have a blank in 28. We're going to have a blank in 32 and some more doubles along the way too. So what are your plans?
Well, my team, my 11 looks great. My first 11 looks great. Don't need to make any changes there. Really happy with it. And then you come to my bench and these are the guys I'm going to need in 25 because I've got... You know, two Newcastle players. I've got Brighton. I've got two United players. You know, I've got problems.
So you've got five potentially blanking in.
Yeah. And then I look at my bench and my bench is Breno, who for Wolves, who's now out of the team because Aitor Nouri's come in. Martial, who's injured.
He's injured.
And Patterson, who I need. So I think I have to sort of think about a move. I think Martial to Nonto is on the cards. That also gives me a bit of money to then strengthen in 25. As well, I've got nothing in the bank, so the De Bruyne to Salah move, for example, it looks really easy, but I'm 0.2 off being able to do that, so I need to free up a little bit of money elsewhere. So I think Martial to Nonto this week, that clears the Martial problem, gets me another player for 25, gets me some money in the bank, and then it's probably going to be a couple of hits in 25 to sort out some of the other messes in my side. So it looks bad, but I think with, you know, a minus four, maybe a minus eight, I can avoid having to play a free hit chip. And I can actually make some good, decent long-term moves to strengthen some of the issues. So it's not panic stations. It's probably going to be a bench player for a bench player transfer, which is a bit of a luxury, but sets me up nicely for 25.
Yeah, whereas I have a slightly different issue because I have only three players that are going to blank in game week 25. I just have Shaw and Rashford and Trippier. So all three of them can take seats on my bench. And I'm quite happy to play the likes of Andreas Pereira, who's one of my bench players. I've got Luca Dean as another one, which I'm not thrilled about playing Luca Dean in game week 25, but then they do have Everton, and Everton aren't exactly scoring loads of goals right now. So, and Luca Dean does seem to have come back from injury and straight back into the team. I was slightly worried he might not because of the signings that they made in January, but he does seem to have taken his place back. So he's not the end of the world either. Kyle Walker-Peters is my biggest problem right now. He's my issue that I need to deal with. Now, I do quite like the idea of doubling up on the Chelsea defence. So I might do that this week ahead of the Southampton game. I might go for Badiashile at Chelsea because when he's playing, they have been keeping clean sheets. All right, they didn't against West Ham, but it was 3-3 before that, plus a couple of bonus points he picked up along the way. So I might look to double up with Kepa and him defensively, but then there's also Tarkowski as well, who could just be a no-brainer to go for because he has the double game week. But I do favour the Chelsea fixtures moving forward over that of Tarkowski, and maybe I could look to move Luca Dean on the week after if I wanted to go and target in on those doubles. But I am looking at my team in some ways for this week and thinking, well, it actually looks like quite a nice starting 11, so maybe I just roll through 24 and have two transfers for game week 25.
Yeah, I think this is a week to kind of consolidate. And if you can save the transfer, I think that's a good move. Because if you can make, you know, two transfers for free next week with the blanks, you might be able to reach players that you couldn't reach before without a hit.
Yeah.
And things like that, not having to make sideways moves. So I think if you look at your team and you look broadly happy with it, I think my advice would be to save it. Obviously, everyone's team is different and you know, you might need to make moves, you know, for 11 players if they're out. But yeah, I think my advice is patience is key. And the more information you've got, probably the better moves you'll be able to make in 25. So hold if you can.
Yeah, I definitely tend to agree with you. I think holding the transfer is the way to go if you can, because then you put yourself in the best position for game week 25. FPL managers still have the potential for more points in game week 23, where Manchester City and Arsenal play each other in this top of the league battle between the two sides. Kelly, myself and Jules will be back with the FPL pod on Thursday this week. We'll be looking at game week 24 in more detail and considering the best picks, as well as helping managers plan for the upcoming blanks and doubles. Bye, guys.
Bye, all.